I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Friday Views brought to you by Yahoo Sports Canada. My name is Iman. You guys already know the deal. Like, subscribe, share with your friends. And I'm joined by my lovely co-host on Dishes and Dimes. Dishes and Dimes. I can't pronounce words today. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Dishes and Dimes. I'm good. I'm good, Iman. Thank you for having me.
You would think I would know how to pronounce it after a few years. It's hard to say quickly.
It is.
You're good. You know why you may be feeling even better? Is this a segue? It's not, but we're gonna roll with it. The Toronto Raptors have finally won a basketball game. They're winning basketball games. They're just coming off of a win against the San Antonio Spurs, where they decided, no, Greg Popovich, you will not be making history today. What are your thoughts on that game that just happened?
I love that they kept that away from Popovich.
Me too. Me too.
I love it. I love that even Fred, I think Fred was asked about it post game and he was like, yeah, it was a little bit of an incentive for us. I was like, good for you, Fred. Yeah.
I love that they're saying that. You know, okay, so I was thinking about this and I was just going through it and maybe I'll do something on it in the future. A lot of history has been made against the Toronto Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, we know the Kobe 81, but also Don Nelson, who was mm-hmm. Greg Popovich's mentor, he got his winningest coach of the year record against the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors head coach in previous years, Lenny Wilkins, was also the winningest NBA head coach, which was always my favorite because whenever the broadcast would do that, they'd be like, the winningest coach in NBA history, Lenny Wilkins. And then there would be an asterisk and it'd also say the losingest coach in NBA history. And I'm like, so he's just coached the most games. That's all I'm getting from this. It was always really funny. But just in preparation for talking about this, I went back and I looked at that Don Nelson game. My goodness, that was a nail biter. That was a fun game. Now, I know nobody cares to like go back 12 years ago and actually talk about it. But can I just tell you, I'm just going to give you a quick synopsis of the last 30 seconds of that game. Okay, 30 seconds or so. The Raptors are down 3 points to the Golden State Warriors. Stephen Curry, who was a rookie at the time, goes to the free throw line. Yeah, he's a rookie, but it's still Stephen Curry. You expect him to make both? No, he misses both. So he has a chance to put the Warriors up 2 possessions, but ends up nothing happening. The Raptors go the other way. I don't know how, but Chris Bosh is at the free throw line. Chris Bosh has the opportunity to bring the Raptors within one, and he does that. So now the Raptors are down one point with like 5 seconds or something left in the game. Warriors inbound the ball in the baseline, and there's a turnover. Chris Bosh gets the ball and puts it up, but he misses and the Raptors lose that way. But that was way more entertaining than the game yesterday that the Raptors played or Wednesday night, if you're listening to this on Friday. So I thought I'd bring it up because, you know what, it was probably more entertaining than talking about the Raptors game, but let's do that because that's what people care about, not a game from 12 years ago.
Maybe they should. I want to say quickly what you said about Don Nelson's record. I feel like that's a good approach to just like life in general, you know, and just to remember that, like, yeah, you can't always be the winningest at everything without just like being the losingest sometimes too.
It happens sometimes. It was always really funny. So the Raptors beat the San Antonio Spurs. Finally, they win a game and not against the Long Island Nets. It's a game against a real NBA team. And the Raptors came out in the second half. That's really where they did it. They came out in the third quarter. Scottie Barnes had a phenomenal game. Pascal Siakam had a phenomenal game. And I think all of that was because of the point guard. You mentioned him, Fred VanVleet, his return. What were your thoughts on how Fred looked in his game back?
I thought he looked great. I thought he looked bouncy, calm. I thought the game looked incredibly organized just because it was like back in his orbit. And I think that was like That had been my worry. And I was like, is it just because Fred's gone in the last like stretch of games? And it's like, yes, it was just because Fred was gone. But I think, yeah, I think he looked fantastic. It didn't look like, you know, anything was really bugging him. It looked like it was good for him to take those 3 days out and just like rest, even if things weren't serious. Sometimes it's good to like get ahead of things like that, especially this time in the season, right? Nobody's at 100%.
He also played 34 minutes instead of 43 minutes yesterday, which is great.
Yeah. That's like a vacation for Fred, I feel right? like.
It's like another game off.
Yeah. No, but I think he looked great, and you can't really like underscore enough how much the team obviously benefits for like being back under his control.
I mean, I think you said it. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Watching it, it just felt like everyone played their role, which was something that they could not do in Fred VanVleet's absence. You had Pascal Siakam not, you know, he didn't lead the team in field goal attempts. He was sort of taking things in the rhythm of an offense instead of trying to generate everything himself. Scotty Barnes did not have to play the point guard role, right? Like, you could take Scotty is such a treat. Like, how do you go from being point guard Scotty to center Scotty, you know, the next game? Like, that was so much fun, but you did sort of get to see him in his most optimal role on the offensive end, which is just kind of, you know, grabbing up every single board and just honestly against one of the league's better defensive centers, really putting on a show and muscling through. It's crazy to think that this kid is only 20 years old. Like, the strength and size that he has to just get inside and dominate there was a lot of fun, but you get to watch these guys kind of play in their roles and everything just felt a little bit more natural than when it had when Fred was out and everyone was having to do everything else essentially.
Yeah, and it's those games you realize, I think, how much like Kyle Lowry, how much Fred VanVleet does that just like you don't miss it unless it's gone. Like you don't see it. And like, that's the beauty and like the skill of a player and players like Fred VanVleet, right? That just like kind of optimize the floor no matter what's going on. Like they tidy up. It's more than just like kicking everything under the rug, and like tidying up, you know, as they go. It's, I don't know. I think, it's just like skill sets that don't really show up. Certainly like in any of the numbers.
Yeah.
But the team had really, really, really been missing and looking a little bit strung out, I think, before.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think part of why I wasn't too mad about it. Now, it's so funny because last week just talking to Raptor fans, like people were just so depressing. Everyone was really sad. Right? Like just when you come off from like winning 8 straight and you're feeling yourself for 7 or however many games it was to just losing to the Magic and the Pistons and the like. It was a depressing time, but I think the mantra that I just continuously repeat in my head is that it's a year of, what's the word I'm looking for? Clearly not a mantra I repeat long enough because I can't think of the word development. It is a developmental year. And everything is, like, I'm fine with Scotty taking that sort of point guard role. In fact, I wanted him coming off the bench so that he could do that a little bit more, because when the starting lineup is there, that's a really complete starting lineup. And Scotty isn't even the tertiary option. Scotty becomes the fifth option when you're talking about OG as your tertiary option. And then Gary Trent when he's on. So allowing Scotty to be a little bit more of the focal of point of the offense, allowing him to handle the ball and really seeing what he does in those roles, allowing Pascal to really force the issue sometimes, I think I think there's benefit to that, because everything that they're doing this year is not about this year. Like nothing that happens at the end of the season really matters. Of course you want guys to be healthy and you want them to go as deep as they can because winning is fun, but ultimately this season doesn't matter as much. Like, not to keep talking about Raptors of the past, but it kind of reminds me of that 2014 Raptors team where they win 48 games. Yes, they were a very, you know, good team in the regular season. They lose in game 7 on a heartbreaker to the Brooklyn Nets, who were a better team in that, you know, there were guys that had won championships and been there before. And that team was different because that team had a bench and the Raptors do not have a bench. And like, but this starting five is more complete than that starting five. This starting five is better than that starting five. And I think even though it was heartbreaking to lose in that fashion in the playoffs, every Raptors fan kind of walked away feeling optimistic because it wasn't about what happened in that season. It was about where the Raptors could go in the next coming years. And I think that that's how we should sort of treat this season. It's not so much what happens this year. And yes, making the playoffs would be nice. Putting a scare into one of those top teams would be nice. Winning a series would be nice. But it's less about that and more about development. And all that's to say, let's talk about some of the guys that are developing this year. Not so much the starters. We'll get into them in a second. But I really wanted to talk about Delano Banton. He's someone who's been such a delight. He's had some time with the G League. His first moment as a Raptor on the court was a half court heave. He's been so much fun to watch. What have you seen from him in terms of his development?
I think the time, like going back and forth to like the 905 and back to the Raptors, has really done him very well. But I think you're seeing that most in his timing. And I think his understanding of where he fits in timing and like the plays of timing. You saw that last night, I think, when he tossed that lob to Precious. Like that's just something neither of them would have been able to do.
Ooh, no.
Like months ago, like the lob would have gone wide, or it would have just been like too much velocity behind a pass like that, right? Or like Precious would have missed.
Would not have been able to catch it.
Yeah, but like something, just like something there clicking, like that just shows to me that yes, he's getting minutes and reps with the 905. He's getting to kind of play really like fast, explosive basketball there. But then when he comes back, he's kind of asked to assimilate, yes, but also kind of like fit all these new skills together and figure out where they go. Because I think that's the thing, like the Raptor, like what you said earlier, just about like, this is a development year, and Delano Banton's such a good example as to why. It's because like you have this like plethora of just like explosive, long, really strong players, but at some point they need to like learn how to control themselves and like understand when to unleash certain like that explosiveness and when to just like hold back, you know. And like Scotty Barnes is doing that quite naturally in terms of when like he gives up, you know, like maybe it's not the best time for him to take a shot, maybe he'll give up the ball to somebody else. Like he's understanding those reads a bit better. I think Delano, that's not what the team's asking him to do, but I think in a similar sense his reads have really, really improved. And like, he's such a confident, like you would never want him to like lose like the cockiness and like the confidence that he has on the floor. So it's nice to see that he hasn't, but I mean, I think anytime you see him, he's just like an energy guy, you know, like it's always like a treat to see him. So I hope that like this range that he played in last night, I think about like 20 minutes, like 20-ish sounds minutes,
right?
That feels like a good and like kind of comfortable range for him. And whether that's like backing up Fred VanVleet or like wherever else Nick Nurse wants to put him, that feels like a good amount of time for him.
Yeah.
Like meaningful minutes, you know?
No, I completely agree. And I always think it's really great when a rookie like that can come in and just absolutely change the tempo with his energy that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's like him having that much of an immediate impact anytime he's on the court is also really fun. You did mention him sort of being the backup point guard to Fred VanVleet, and someone, you know, I didn't even put on the rundown just because I'm so sad that he's hurt. Someone who was playing fantastic before getting hurt, and that's Malachi Flynn. And we've got to see, you know, the leash was really tight on Malachi, especially early on in the season. I mean, everyone who was not a starting five, was not a part of the starting five. Nick Nurse just didn't really have an appetite to play. But he was great in his, you know, in the minutes that we didn't have Fred VanVleet, and like doing a lot of the things that we sort of ask and want from Fred in terms of like establishing pace and control and, you know, hitting big shots when it's needed. What are your thoughts on what we got to see from Malachi?
I really liked it. I mean, I think like it's so tough with Malachi because he's kind of in this limbo, right? Where like I really stand by the fact that like he had like one of the weirdest rookie seasons.
Yeah.
Like every rookie had a weird season last season, but like Raptors rookies, you know, like you're not in Toronto. You have no semblance of a routine. You're kind of asked to establish that now in your sophomore year in the NBA as you come back. The team also looks completely different than what it did than when the season ended.
Mm-hmm.
You're being asked to kind of like, you understand a role that you maybe had is now yours to lose, just given like the other personnel on the team. So I think it was a tough start, and I never thought that sometimes he could look a bit like trepidatious on the floor, and you kind of wanted him to just like show the confidence that you know that he has in his game, because the skill never like he's always working on things, right? And you can see that because he's always, I think, stayed ready. So it was great to just like see that they were like, all right, now we're relying on you, you know.
And he got to play with that confidence. He didn't have to look over his shoulder every time he made a mistake, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that he just like, he, it showed that he was ready. And I think, I just hope that there's more that they will work him into the rotation in a meaningful way now, you know what I mean? Like, and I understand it's tough. There are a lot of guys like opting for those minutes, but to me, if you want to be careful about the management of Fred's minutes, especially as he's kind of coming back to 100%, it makes sense to me to utilize Malachi Flynn. And like another thing is like Malachi is not going to be like Delano. He's not going to go back and forth to 905 to the Raptors. Yeah. Like that's, I don't really think that would serve him in the same way. So it's tough. Like he's had a tough season and I think it is very heartening to see that he's like, he's still ready to make the most of it.
Yeah, I know. Now, someone who I thought would go back and forth, at least at the start of the season, I was talking to Heat fans and Heat podcasters and writers and just saying, I think that's kind of the route it's going to be for a guy like Precious Achiuwa, you know, the law mate, but that's not been the case. And I think in large part, that's because the Raptors needed him and like they could not, they needed as many bodies as they could get. And he plays such a vital role for what this team needs, especially just, you know, being able to guard big guys. Mm-hmm. But he's been, I mean, like you just mentioned it, his ability to catch that lob. One thing from Delano is not anything I would have expected from him earlier this year. And I saw a tweet, I think it was from Seagal, who said that he's shooting like 37 or 38% from deep since January 1st. And he is my favorite three-point shooter. He is, you know, move over Andrea Bargnani. He is the enigma of all enigmas now. My favorite thing about his threes are that they never hit rim. Like there was one against the Cavs and I tweeted it out. I was like, oh my gosh, a Precious three hit front rim. They never hit rim. It's either all net, like a swish, or it's an air ball, or it's hitting like the top of the backboard and has like no chance. Like he's either missing by a ton or making it. And just either way, he's allergic to the rim. It's so much fun watching him shoot, regardless of where that journey takes us. It's always a fun treat with Precious Achiuwa. What have you seen from him in terms of his development this season?
I was a Precious Achiuwa fan, like since I saw him playing in summer league. And I just thought like, wow, this is a really complete player. I think you saw some growing pains, you know, like probably earlier to mid in the season when it just seemed like, you know, there were times we want to talk about how good Scotty has been at recognizing when the best opportunities might not come from him. Sometimes Precious Achiuwa had trouble recognizing the same things and like, you know, wanting to get a little bit ISO, kind of missing calls, you know, and like missing those reads that we talked about earlier. And part of me was like, okay, is this just a guy who's like trying to establish himself in the rotation, who wants to like play to his confidence and show the coaches that like, yeah, maybe I'm going to like ding up a read here, but I'll make up for it like in this other way. Because I think defensively, he's also shown like such capability and much more, I think, versatility than I would have anticipated.
Yeah.
Like right off the bat, especially for just like some of the like the defenses that Nick Nurse throws out there. But I think it feels like a nice, like full circle a little bit to see him now come around and like to be this, especially on a team that always is in need of another shooter to like see those numbers climbing, you know, and climbing kind of reliably. It makes me feel like what we're seeing in Precious is here to stay. You know, I believe him when he said earlier in the season, when he was talking to Kim about like how Kim was like really pushing him to just work on the basics and the fundamentals and to like keep things as simple as he could. And I really think that's gotta be tough for a player like Precious Achiuwa. Delano Banton's the same way, but like guys that are as close to positionless, if you want to call it that, right, than not, because they're being asked to do so much in any given game. Like that's a difficult skill set for anyone to learn, let alone when you're just like your second year really in the NBA.
It's wild to me to think about as well. It's so crazy to think that it's only his second year.
Yeah. Like, cause I think again, like he just like looks so much more complete, but like, it just must be tough to like hold all that in your head and then to be like, okay, but I also have to be a really reliable shooter. Like I have to work on my handle. Like I have to get these reads right. You got to like stick certain things. And I feel like he really did. He maybe had to like pin down some of the basics for himself before he could like really accelerate into this new gear.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I wanted to see him get some run with the 905 is he can do so much that he just gets in his head and tries to do everything at one time. And you're just like, slow down a little bit. Like, let's calm down a little bit. And I think he's playing a lot more within himself. He's still going to have moments where I'm just like, oh my God, what are you doing? But I feel like those are fewer and far between now than they were at the start of this year. His shooting has just been like ridiculous to watch from the corners, just his ability to do that, something that the Raptors really going to need moving forward. And I'm just like waiting on the days that like Siakam and Scotty and like, if you have your 6'9" guys being able to shoot, if that's what the Raptors are banking on, because part of me is like, yes, if you look at what the Raptors need, they need more shooters. They need to be able to bring guys in the offseason who can shoot. I was a really big proponent of getting a guy like Eric Gordon at the trade deadline. The Raptors need shooting, but also the Raptors are a team that believe they can teach shooting. You know, you can't teach a guy to be 6'9". You can't teach a guy to have a 7-foot wingspan. You can't teach a guy to be as athletic as most of these guys are on the team, but you can teach a guy to shoot. And we're seeing that with Precious, and we saw it, you know, initially with OG Anunoby. He came into the league as a guy who can't shoot and was a lights out shooter from day one for the Raptors. I don't really know what that's about, but it's clearly something that they're banking on their ability to teach guys. And anytime I get like a little bit down on the Raptors' lack of shooting, I'm just like, if one of these 6'9" guys hit, or like if two of these 6'9" guys hit, the Raptors are going to be a very scary team. And that's always a lot of fun, but Precious, the enigma of all enigmas. I'm so excited for what he can become, because he's one of the most fun players that you can watch, just because it's a roller coaster every single time.
It really is. I mean, and it goes back to like the point that you said earlier of like, this is a development year also in understanding what you can ask of a lot of these guys, right? Like, and how complete they are this season. And you have to know that going into the off season, where you're looking to retool a little bit, right? And tweak here and there. You're not trying to make any drastic moves. At least I don't really think the team should be. And like, based on what the market looks like this summer, it's not really a worthwhile thing to do. Like, you've got so much talent. I think this was a season to ask as much as you could from players. You know, if it's like in Scottie Barnes's case, like, put him everywhere. Yes, some game he's going to be the point guard, another game he's going to be around, like, he'll be center maybe. Like, it doesn't, you want to test and like push and stretch. In that way, a postseason run would be great because it would give just like more experience, you know, but that's not, as you said, like, that's not been the goal for this season. And I think like to stay sane and like a happy fan, to remind yourself that like, that was never, this is a developmental year and everything else is just like a nice bonus.
Exactly. And I kind of like liken it to the Cavs this season. I don't think that like it's a disappointment or it's a disappointing season for the Cavs if they lose out in the first round of the playoffs. I think that they should see this as a developmental year. They happen to be deeper than the Raptors, which is why I think that they're better.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Better than the Raptors, they've had real terrible injury luck as well, but they've just had more depth. They've had, you know, Kevin Love coming off the bench, you know, Ricky Rubio at the start of the season before getting injured. They've had guys that the Raptors just haven't had. And but I also think that, like, if the Raptors and the Cavs are at the same point in April or May, it wouldn't be surprising to anyone, and both teams could walk away being like, yep, that was a developmental year. Let's try again next year. Mm-hmm. And build on what we could do or what we did this year. So yeah, all that's to say, developmental year. All right. So let's actually move over to some, because every time we talk about the fact that this is a developmental year for the team, we're talking about guys like Scottie Barnes and Precious Achiuwa, Malachi. We just sort of went through the gauntlet of guys that we focus on. But I want to talk about some of the more established guys as well, because I think this is a developmental year for the Raptors as a whole. Mm. So I'm going to throw some names at you, and I want you to give me one thing that they can develop on this season or off season to bring into next season to push the Raptors sort of over the hump that they're at right now. Are you ready?
I think so.
All right, let's start off with our rookie, because we didn't actually get time to touch on him. We talked about Precious, Malachi, and Delano, but we didn't get time to talk about Scottie. So let's start off with Scottie Barnes. What are you looking for him to add to his game?
That's tough, because, like, he might be the hardest one, because I think he's added everything to his game. You know, this every game, every time this season, you're like, wow, he's, like, hit another echelon. Like, we really didn't expect him to be here this quickly, you know? He'll just kind of turn around and add to it again. Maybe this is just like a tweak, but like maybe his handle, just because I have seen, and I understand like the criticism of it, but I also think that he looks so comfortable, like, because he can like dribble way at where his arm is, like that obviously works for him, you know? Yeah. And I haven't really seen it trip him up, but it does really make him open to turnovers. So I don't know, maybe just like keeping things a little bit closer to the body. I think sometimes in transition, it can trip him up a little bit. So maybe his handle, I think it was like two seasons ago, OG went away and worked on his handle in the summer, and he came back like, and you could just tell, like, it just looks so much better.
Yeah.
So that's it. Honestly, I also just like, Scottie should have an off season, take some time off.
Scottie, go sightseeing. Take a look at Niagara Falls. Do the tour that Kawhi did before leaving us. Do that entire tour. Get all of Canada as
much
as
can. But don't end it the same way.
Yeah, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Come back and you'll get to experience all of the winter fun the following year. What do we have in the winter? We've got, you know, in the fall, we have Nuit Blanche. In the winter, we have the Christmas market. There are tons of things for you to see next season as well. Don't worry, Scottie. All right. So next up on the list, another young guy, Gary Trent Jr. What are you looking for him to improve in the offseason?
I'd say shooting, just because he came into that like this relatively late with the team this season, as also being asked to be the kind of like spot up shooter. I think he is good in situations where he has an opening, but I would like to see him learn to like, not learn, because again, I'm not trying to imply he doesn't know how to do this, but to capitalize more on like creating those moments, right? Mm-hmm. And like shot creation in that sense, because that's something the Raptors always need. Like even at the best of times, you know? So Gary, just like keep doing what you're doing.
I kind of like that for both of the guys so far. You've kind of just mentioned improving on what they're already good at. Mm-hmm. So it's not like even just like a whole other skill set. It's just like you're here, you sort of fit a role on this team for a reason, and it's just improving on that there. All right, let's go to the next guy up. OG Anunoby. Who, oh my gosh, it feels like a lifetime since I've seen him play basketball, but.
OG, I just want him to stay well. So like, I don't know how you can improve
Like, go sightseeing with Scotty Barnes, OG.
But like wrap yourself in bubble wrap. I don't know. Like, no, I know G, he'll work out like probably all summer, you know, and like work on something, especially because again, once again, like he didn't get the runway that I've actually wanted to see. I think every season since he was drafted, he's like, he hasn't had an uncomplicated, uninterrupted season. Yeah. And I just always wish that for him. So maybe that's what I want for him, but that is like, you know, that's just like the fates. That has to do with the fates and not with OG.
No, I'm with you on that. OG very much feels like the glue of this team. And so, yeah, you know what? We need you healthy for the entirety of a season, OG. And I know we please. Pascal Siakam, what do you want Pascal to improve on?
You know, I wouldn't mind to see some more playmaking from Pascal. I don't know. Maybe that's like too much to ask for, but I feel like he could do it, especially if the Raptors are ever going to go out and like try and mirror the Kawhi success in the sense of targeting like another, you know, like a number one kind of superstar. Like if Pascal's not going to be your number one superstar, but you bring somebody else that's in and is really big, you want him to be able to be like fluid around that. And I know that's like a big if. I'd like him to work on his playmaking, even just like if the team stays as it is.
Yeah.
I think it just like opens a lot up. I also think it would be so much fun.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I love giving the 6'9 guys the ability to handle the ball and playmake. Also, just all of them shoot so that I can be really happy next season.
Yeah.
Pascal's another one. We just sort of talked about it with OG Anunoby's seasons always being interrupted. Pascal's, when was the last time that he had an off season that wasn't interrupted? I feel like it might have been the championship year, and we saw him come in the next season shoot lights out, you know, because he had the ability to practice that. His handle got tighter because he had the ability to practice that. And since then, he hasn't really, so we haven't been able to see him add other elements to his game. And so just allowing him an off season to actually work on his game for the first time since he became an all-NBA player, I'm excited for that. So I just stay healthy, because I think this summer could be massive for, you know, next season's Pascal Siakam. I'm actually really looking forward to that. I think it could be a lot of fun.
It's true, because it's like, it'll be the first off season in two summers.
Yeah.
That's true to the kind of old or like traditional routine that these guys are used to.
And even though the other one before that would have been so short because, hey, you were the last team standing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So he hasn't really been able to have a full off season to truly work on his game. I'm so excited for it, because anytime we've seen that from Pascal, the jumps that he's made are not just minimal. I think he could have a really big year. I'm knocking on all sorts of wood right now. All right. So next up, the leader of the team, Freddy Vondelay, Freddy All-Star, whatever they call him. He has so many names. Fred VanVleet, what are your thoughts? What does he need to, what would you like to see him improve on heading into next season? He kind of feels like the adult in the room. Like, even talking really about does. Pascal, they're like the same age, like a few weeks apart. There's something about Fred that just feels, I feel like Fred would have been an adult as a kindergartner. You know what I mean? Like, he would have been the stern faced kid being like, don't throw toys. He just feels like such the adult in the room. But what are you looking for?
Well, like, Fred, kind of on that note, I'm also of the mind to be like, what do I know to tell Fred VanVleet as like the adult? Like, you know, you're right, like that he wouldn't just kind of look at you sternly and be like, really? Because I also think a lot of what I would ask for, he's already doing. Like, I didn't expect him to be this ready this fast into like being the leader of the team in the way that he's had to like step into that role. But like, it just shows how much he was just like watching with like an like eagle eye and photographic memory, like everything Kyle Lowry, you know, had been doing. And he was like ready to put his own spin on it. I this feels like a cop out, but I don't think there's anything.
I know. I think that's completely fair. Fred is, I mean, like the things that people sort of poke in his game, he's either completely improved. Like, I had never been the biggest Fred VanVleet fan. I can't speak today, but this season, and I think last season as well, I completely changed my tune. I'm just like, well, Fred is that guy. Like, he's just, he's improved so much. And I think he kind of came into this, into his career a little bit. And I kind of get it as a bet on yourself type of guy. He was someone who bet on himself on the court, probably a little bit too much, where, you know, there'd be a 7-footer at the right in front of the basket and he would still drive in without actually looking anywhere else on the court. You know, a lot of tunnel vision in his game. That's completely changed. I think his ability to see the floor, his ability to read defenses, he gets doubled every single time and is making the right read and the right pass ahead of time every single time. Like, he just has so much poise and control with which he plays that I don't think was always there. Sometimes it would just be him barreling towards the basket. And now the way that he contorts his body, even to get those finishes, like, he's never going to be an elite finisher, someone who is barely 6 feet tall on a good day. But he's still, like, watching him in transition, absolute bucket, right? Which is something that we wouldn't have said 3 or 4 years ago. His playmaking has improved. His mid-range game, like, I remember, when was the last time the Raptors had a Christmas game? That was the year of the bubble. I think that was, like, the first, there was something that I read or some heard at the game where it was, like, his first mid-range shot of the season. And I'm just like, it's December 25th. Like, basketball have been played for like 2 months at this point. And he's completely changed that. And that was what, 2 years ago. So every aspect of his game, he's just improved. And what I'm looking for next season from him is just continual improvement in those areas. And also just stay healthy, because this team needs you. Like, they can't do anything without you. They need the adults on the court and in the room at all times. So yeah, that's all I'm looking for Fred. He's just not enough good things to say about Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, and these guys this season. Last person that I did want to ask you about, someone who I've been known to maybe be an apologist for, that's Nicholas Nurse. What are your thoughts on Nick? What would you like for Coach Nurse to improve on heading into next season? And why is it giving Malachi Flynn more minutes?
Yeah, it's giving Malachi Flynn more minutes. It's like dusting off Utah Watanabe, who I feel like you've just forgotten about, or you've forgotten about that he's a great defensive option. Mm-hmm. If he's not giving you the offensive, like the offense that you want from him, like, it can, you know, he can work. He works very well.
And he'll keep the defense honest. He's not one of those guys. He'll keep the defense honest in that he's not one of those guys that's going to pass up the three. He might not make it, but he's not going to be passing it up, which sometimes what you want as well.
I think where I will be critical of Nick Nurse is I think he has sometimes can get in a rut in terms of what he is asking of from the team and isn't necessarily, like, for someone who is as creative as he's been in the past, you know, and obviously not afraid to take chances, try weird things. He does still get caught up in ruts. He's done that, I think, recently, like through what the offenses that he's asking of from the team. I think it's been a lot more focus on like ISO kind of play, which is weird to me because that's never been in the DNA of any Raptors team. Especially and like, I know this one is largely different, but like your mainstays, your main guys, that's not how they learned to play basketball, and like that's not how they kind of came up in the team. So I think, you know, the offense is always like more generative of itself when everybody's getting touches, there's a lot of ball movement, you know. It's like, yeah, it's just like a lot of quick smart passing, and that has like, maybe again, maybe that was just like Fred being out for a little bit, but Nick Nurse seemed to get really stuck there. So I think, like, I know you got to, it's like a fine line of like wanting to push your players, but you also got to at times let them play to their strong suits, right? And like let them play to their skills, because you have to keep, your job is also to like keep their confidence up and to foster that in them. And there's so many young players on this team, you know, and kind of players who didn't necessarily get a fair shake or a lot of minutes in the situations that they left or were in just before the Raptors. So am not always a fan of like the tough love approach of Nick Nurse, because sometimes I think it just doesn't work, you know, like anyway, that's my,
no, I completely, Nick Nurse is like alternate universe Ted Lasso. because like, I'm sure he says a lot, he's got a lot of funny sayings like a Ted Lasso, but yeah, that part that you just said about uplifting your players or not really hitting their confidence, not, you know, Nick Nurse's strong suit. He's not really one to bite his tongue in front of the media when he doesn't like what a player does, but also, I think you're right in that we almost talk about Nick Nurse as though, because he's like this creative genius and box and one, and look how like out of the box his thinking is. And, you know, he comes in and he's like, we're actually going to start to stagger Jonas and Serge Ibaka, and like all of these things that, you know, out of the box thinking, sure, but he's also very rigid. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, you bring in guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Stanley Johnson, he's like, they're not playing championship level basketball, like defense. So they're not, like, they're known for their defense. That's all they do. But he's like, they're not playing up to par with, you know, the way that we play here. So they're actually, and that's in practice, so they're not going to get any run in the regular season. And I think we're starting to see the drawbacks of that, because, mm-hmm. hey, like Fred, Pascal, OG, Gary, they can't continuously play 40 plus minutes a night because you're reluctant to play any of your bench guys because they're not producing on the defensive end the way that you want them to do in practice. But then you're also watching this Raptors team and you're like, no one is producing defensively like you want them to. Like, the Raptors have stretches where they look phenomenal on the defensive end. And I think that that's kind of been a critique from a lot of Raptor fans as well, is that the defense that the Raptors deploy is like very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because defense is played on a string, because you are starting a rookie who sometimes, and I think he's gotten a lot better, has looked lost at times, especially mm-hmm. early on in the season, when you don't have a guy like Pascal Siakam, when OG Anunoby is taking on so much of the offensive load, you know, his defense wasn't, you know, OG Anunoby level defense, at least at the start of the season. And so you have these sort of breaks in your starting five, and you're still playing this aggressive style defense instead of like, hey, maybe we need to change certain things because it doesn't match the roster that we currently have. And that's not an adjustment that Nick Nurse has made on the offensive end or on the defensive end. Instead, he's like, this is what we do, and we're going to continue to do it this way, and you guys are going to learn how. And I think that can pay off for the Raptors. I think in the long run, it can play off, because I think Masai Ujiri and Nick Nurse are kind of the same mind. At least it looks like the front office is of the same mind with Masai, mm-hmm. with Nick Nurse, and that they're bringing in guys that theoretically should fit what he's trying to do, at least on the defensive end. But it also kind of reminds me of the story that we read about with Nate Bjorkgren last year, that sort of expose, where a big part of it was like, the roster does not fit what Bjorkgren is trying to run on the court. Like, yeah, you cannot be asking this much of Sabonis defensively. And it felt like Bjorkgren kind of came from the same mind of Nick Nurse, which is like, this is how we run things. And it didn't really matter that it didn't fit the roster. And that was different because the front office and the coaching staff were not aligned. So the roster did not make sense to what the coach was doing. And that's why that didn't work out. Whereas here, you can kind of see a vision for it because there is some sort of alignment. That was a lot of words. I'm not sure if a lot of that made sense, but that's kind of the way that I see it. So Nick, be a little bit more malleable, you know, have fun. Maybe go sightseeing with Scotty and OG, and that will brighten your mood. And you can come in next year a little bit more like Ted Lasso and not his, you know, darkest timeline alternate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
I wanted to close off on one last part, which is, you know, Ben Simmons is returning to Philadelphia today, and that's what everyone is talking about. And everyone's talking about all of the boos that could be rained down on him. And I'm seeing lots of comparisons to, you know, Vince Carter's return to the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, Raptors had a similar thing, obviously not to the same degree, with Goran coming back here and getting the boo treatment anytime he touched the ball. What are your thoughts on the whole mess of booing players and then maybe the reception that Ben Simmons might get tonight?
I have to say, I thought the Goran booing was funny because it mostly speaks to like how few players in Raptors history have like warranted boos. Because to me, the like the spectrum of like Vince Carter to like Goran Dragic, like they are not close, right? To like what they did or like their impacts.
It's been a very cushy last decade. Okay. Yeah, we need something like, to be upset by.
We wanted the boo. So like, I thought it was pretty funny. Yeah. So I was for that. I was at the game when the boos like for Vince Carter turned into cheers finally, and they ran a montage for him and he cried. I cried. I feel like everybody was crying. And it was beautiful. And I still think about that. I don't think Ben Simmons is ever going to get that in Philadelphia, though, because it's a different franchise. It's a different fan base, to put it politely. It's like a different situation completely with Ben Simmons as well.
He means less to that franchise, too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So I guess I'm... The boos are going to happen. Like the thing with the boos is they're going to happen no matter what. Like if someone starts booing, it'll get picked up. They're definitely going to happen with Ben Simmons. So I think like if you understand why it sort of fits the circumstance, then I don't think it's, you should like pretend to be surprised by it. You know what I mean? Like
or Ben Simmons offended knows. By it.
Yeah. Like Ben Simmons knows what he's getting into. So and I think they're going to rain down on him like the whole time.
Oh yeah. Me too. And like, I'm all for it. You know, Okay. So I remember going to a game. It was Raptors versus Spurs. Speaking of Spurs, tie into this. And it was like one of Vince's like last few games with the Raptors, and the boo started then. And I feel like that's a different treat. Like, I'm not for that. I remember like I was like 8 or 9 and being like, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. But that I'm not for. Did Vince Carter have a terrible game? Yes. Did it look like he was point shaving? Yes. Did the boos make sense? Kind of. But I'm not a fan of that. But this, I mean, basketball is fun. It's like I keep coming back to like it's grown men playing a children's game, and like part of what's fun about being a fan is the hyperbolic nature of it all, where like you live and die by how your team plays, but like in the grand scheme of things it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is like the cheering and the booing. It's like creating villains. Like Vince Carter for a large part of my life was a villain. Kobe Bryant for a large part of my life was a villain. I cried when Kobe tore his Achilles and I was like, what? Like, this is affecting me in this way. You know, I cried watching the Vince Carter tribute, not even being at the game. And it's like tying yourself emotionally into this just makes it all the more fun. So I'm all for that. One little rant that I do want to have, like I haven't spoken enough, is people have turned this into, oh, the big bad Sixers fans. Yeah, are Sixers fans harsher than most fan bases? Yes, sure. I'm not going to take that away from them. But I don't know a fan base that has been that supportive of Ben Simmons arguing every single thing for this man. Like, Raptor fans know it. How many times did you guys get into it back and forth over, like, who should be deep, who's a better perimeter defender, or who's the best perimeter defender in the NBA? Like, they've been so strong in terms of support for Ben Simmons until it turned. And I think where my issue is, everyone mocked him where they were defending him. It was like the league joke. It was the easiest joke to make. It was a joke that was being made when I would be, you know, doing on-air stuff for like non-basketball people who would just be like, oh, well, you know, Ben Simmons doesn't shoot a three, or like, you know, what's more likely to happen, Ben Simmons shooting a three or like something else that has nothing to do with basketball, because that was like the punchline. And so it turning into this being like, oh, Sixers fans are at fault for turning on him and not, you know, being mean to him, and that's what this is about, when like he was the punchline for everybody else and everyone gets to sort of sit on their high horse. I'm not about. I think that's unfair to Sixers fans. Did they turn on him? Yes, sure. But I think this comes down to like they're just wanting their player to sort of take accountability for the way that things ended. And I don't know that it's completely fair to just blame them as fans for this entire situation when they have defended him for most of it. That's my entire thing. I just don't think we can sit back on our high horse, pretend that we haven't made Ben Simmons jokes, and pretend that it's just the big bad Sixers fans. I just don't think that's fair.
That's a good point. I also think an important thing to remember is everyone eventually got what they wanted. So
everyone's happy.
You can boo. You know what I mean? Like, you can boo to your heart's content. Ben Simmons is where he wants to be, ostensibly. You know, you got James Harden, Daryl Morey is happy, Sixers fans are happy, and Embiid's got his second guy now. Like, everything worked out in the way that everybody wanted it to. Maybe that's more reason to boo.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah.
And now our podcast comes to an end as well. So thank you so much for joining me, Katie. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Friday Views.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.